Yeah, these exposures, some of them are, obviously some will be time exposures, but things like you're seeing right there are only 8/1000ths of a second exposures done with a Nikon digital camera, SLR as a matter of fact. I've been a developer for Nikon for the last few years, and of course I've used their equipment since I was about 12 years old. And so they've been very good to me. Working with pulse lasers, obviously we're talking about some fraction of 8/1000ths of a second is considered really long in the pulsed world. So this is as close as I could get with a simple, quick camera. This whole project, I might as well tell you a little bit about it. This started out, my producer in San Francisco hired me to produce these sort of impressionistic views of water to be used in a film called The Mysterious Soul of Water. And so there's a number of PhDs and all kinds of scientists and MDs that are in this film talking about some very amazing aspects of water and the importance of it and its energetic principles and all that. And even though these gentlemen were very, very, very interesting, they were basically, it was talking heads. So they came to me to do something that they could intersperse with these talking heads while they were talking. And I discovered many years ago that actually some of the most profound principles can be conveyed when they're accompanied with fairly abstract imagery, because then the mind does not focus on deconstructing the imagery of what they see, i.e. a person talking, and it kind of opens up the space where you can sort of appreciate what's being said more. Anyway, I haven't even gotten to these notes. All right, so I'm probably down to about 5 minutes left. Oh, I love this. It looks like I've screwed with the film, but actually this weird solarization effect that you just saw, that was just based on those were drips hitting a granite, the side of a fountain, and because it was noon, the granite was warm, hot, and so it would spall, the fountain would spall drops, they'd hit, they would drip, and then they would evaporate as they were dripping, and because of the as you all know, the lack of the disparities in the thickness of the drips, because of the heat as they're evaporating, it caused that weird little solarized effect around the edge. It was really cool, but everybody thinks I screwed with the film. This is all, oh, that's tea boiling in my kitchen. Ah, the diffraction grating, only to be used judiciously. I'm proud of that. Should we let this roll? Okay. Oh, by the way, I guess you already figured out it's thousands and thousands of still pictures. There's no video involved. Because I couldn't get an 8,000th of a second exposure out of my video camera. And as I said, I really don't want to shoot at 8. I want to shoot at, you know, a billionth or, you know, 10 billionths or whatever. But obviously the interplay of light and water, yeah, oh, never mind. You can figure that out. There is no film. There hasn't been film in my life for 9 years. I got divorced. These were all shot with the Nikon D70. Obviously, the time exposures are not going to qualify for this pulse, insight, but I couldn't help myself. This was a blast. This is actually a continuous stream of water to the eye, but when I started shooting at 8,000 of a second, all of a sudden I discovered these huge spaces between these globs. Really a shock. Ah, familiar pattern. Doesn't that look like glass? Just glass pouring out of there. So as I originally said, you know, I was a student of Bucky Fuller's, and he used to talk about the need for modeling. And since I earlier said that everything, it's all waves. Sometimes all we have to do as scientists is just pay attention, just look more carefully at something that everyone's looked at before and see something in a different way. And this is where the discoveries come from, somewhat serendipitously, oftentimes, but nonetheless, someone was paying close attention. Whole environmental side to this that I'm not going to get into today. Alrighty then. And if there are no questions, A, I've done something wrong, or B, but if you want that holographic hook, I'm ready to go to be hooked off. Quickly? No? All right.
Yeah,
okay, great. Right. And this has nothing to do with what you just saw. And it's Monty Python's data, and now for something completely different. We are in this extraordinary opportunity. I haven't taken a tour yet, and I hope maybe to have an opportunity before this is all over. And it seems to be that one of the most, it seems obvious, and there's a lot of people talk about this, and that is that the incredible ranting research availability of inexpensive LEDs. It's like a no-brainer, and everyone talks about it all, you know, outside this room. But it, so far, I think, unless I missed something, but the reality is that this is like perhaps on the leading edge of one of the things that might bring some light through to taking us to some other place. For instance, for years I've been reading, ever since I was teaching out in San Jose, teaching a local art workshop out there during that time and space, whatever they call it, the Canadian thing. There was a guy who came in from, I think it's Hewlett Packard's optical electronics lab out in Palo Alto, and he came in one day and as a present, he handed me, this is, gosh, I'm reminding you, this is at least 10 years ago, and he handed me as a present a series of LEDs that had these molded optics on them, and we hooked them up to like a little 9-volt battery with a resistor, and this is, as I said, more than 10 years ago, and it was like, bang! That there's something afoot here that could really be applied. And what I had been predicting ever since that moment was the resurgence in transmission holograms. You know how everybody's absolutely thrilled with how deep and sharp transmission holograms are? Well, it ain't gonna happen with a halogen light. So the advent of these, in the case of what I was handed, I don't know what exists today, because I haven't looked into it, but at the time it was about a 10 nanometer bandwidth, so it was not absolutely coherent, but it was insanely tight. And emission and spectrum and so I can see a resurgence hopefully in transmission types. People love them and anyway, there's enough of that. As far as white light viewable holograms go, yes, absolutely positively. Where the heck is the actual state-of-the-art report on the subject? Maybe somebody in this room can also come up and speak on this extemporaneously, because we are. Maybe someone in this building that isn't in this room can actually tell us, because for God's sakes, it's 2006. All right, so. Anyway, another thing very quickly, those were those fantastic papers that were given by Pearl. Oh my God, I did the wrong thing again. I have to stand in front of you. Fantastic papers that Pearl gave and the other papers that were given on the subject of science education. My expectation is to the next Dr. Dennis Gabor is not going to come from this room, but it's going to come from some kid who's probably about 12 years old right now. And so we have a public service announcement in the United States that's called Give Something Back. And it's basically about going to a hospice or a hospital or an old age home or somewhere and give an hour of your time in the course of a week to people who might need you to sing them a song or read them a book or, I don't know, do something. So as artists and scientists, I think that maybe we need to do that too. All of you in this room have holograms sitting in a box somewhere and they're not being seen and it's not doing anybody any good. And yes, they might be deteriorating sitting in that box, but while they can be seen, they should be seen, and perhaps they should be seen in places that are not the fancy places like Setsuko has been so wonderfully honored to be able to display in. In other words, if you're not a billion-dollar corporation, but maybe you're, I know this sounds crazy, but the corner bakery. There are blank walls. There are places where people can be enlightened, turned on to holography. Maybe it's not the very best hologram you made. Maybe it's not the latest hologram you made. But gosh darn it, there may be a hologram you made 10 years ago that's still going to fascinate the hell out of somebody who's never seen a hologram before. So instead of sitting in a box, get yourself an LED for $10 or whatever the hell it is these days, and put it in a place that's outside of the norm, someplace that is not necessarily so fancy that you wouldn't expect to see, quote, art. We already are struggling with the difficulty of being accepted as art. I mean, there's how many Setsuko Ishis are there? So what I'm trying to say is think outside the box. That's the only place we're going to get to the next octave, the only way we're going to get to the next octave. So if you have holograms sitting around that are doing nothing, obviously, you don't want to give them away because you have some imagination that these are the precious things that are going to worth gazillion dollars someday after you die. And then what's the point? So pull them out of the box. Take those holograms that may have a tiny imperfection. I mean, we've been plagued by this thing, the idea that a tiny, tiny speck on a hologram makes the whole freaking thing totally of no use in an exhibit scenario because it's got that tiny, teeny speck. Probably 100 holograms that are made in the process of generating a holographic work have specks to the one that has no specs. So what are you going to do with all those? They're sitting in a box. I know you know what I'm talking about. All right, let me go to the next point. Done? Okay, that's enough. I've said enough. Thank you very much.